Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The search for truth never ends. Introducing June's Journey, a hidden object mobile game with a captivating story. Connect with friends, explore the roaring 20s, and enjoy thrilling activities and challenges while supporting environmental causes. After 7 years, the adventure continues with our immersive travels feature. Explore distant cultures and engage in exciting experiences. There's always something new to discover. Are you ready? Download June's Journey now on Android or iOS.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
It's a band called First Aid Kit, and the song is My Silver Lining. It's our first bump here of the 5 o'clock hour. I always post the bumper music list at Mark Reardon KFTK if you'd like to follow on the X, formerly Twitter. And don't forget, my bunny Oreo has a new page on Instagram. Oh, it is a smashing success. You can follow him at Oreo Smorio the Bunny. Oreo Smorio the Bunny. Sue laughs at that. It was the best I could do.
Well,
Oreo the
Bunny was taken. There's a lot of Oreo bunnies out there.
There are.
Yeah.
Well, I told you, he's a
Who
Dutch.
Knew?
Well, he's
yeah.
a Dutch, and a Dutch is essentially, most of them are black and white. There's brown. So that's why I'm telling you, you've never had gone through the it's a very traumatic experience trying to name a pet with children because they come up
Ooh,
with the
true.
Dumbest things. But this was one where Alexis saw this bunny when we got him in Howard County. She's like, Oreo, because it was like a no-brainer.
Sure.
All right, there
Apparently
you go.
Apparently all the kids of America named him
well,
the same thing.
There's a few out yeah. there for sure. Kilmeade's coming up here in a few minutes. Senator Schmidt as well. And then we'll spend a little time on audio cut of the day, maybe going back to Bob Uecker's passing as well. And David Lynch, the director, died today as well. But I've been following the CNN defamation case, and it is interesting. It's about to wrap up. Jessica Kosciuszko is with us with the Free Beacon. She's been doing great work. I'm following all your stuff on Twitter, Jessica. But this thing is coming down now to the end, isn't it?
Yeah, hi. Thanks so much for having me on. I had to just step out of the courtroom. We're still here. We're expecting a verdict either today or sometime early tomorrow morning. And the first part of that deliberation and verdict is whether or not the jurors think CNN is liable for defamation, and then how much money the plaintiff, Zachary Young, who's a Navy veteran, how much money he should get. And then tomorrow, if they do find CNN liable, it's how much punitive damages CNN has to pay. And really, that's going to be the number that gets to that $1 billion number that's been thrown around a lot. That's the one where this is something CNN has to learn not to do again.
So, Jessica, one of the things, and I talked about this a little bit earlier today, and I know that you've done some reporting on this and Nick Fontecchio as well, but did the judge actually force CNN's attorney to apologize to the jury because they misled them last week?
Yeah, there's been a lot. The judge, he's really great from what I've seen from afar, but there's been sorry, give me just 1 second. Yeah, I mean, CNN's attorney had to apologize this morning as well to the plaintiff, Zachary Young, because he basically accused the plaintiff of lying in his deposition and his testimony, even though he had no evidence for that. So he didn't only just have to apologize to the plaintiff. He also actually had to apologize to the judge because he improperly referred to the judge
Wow.
instead of Your Honor yesterday. He referred to the judge as Mr. Henry, his last name. And the judge said very well, like, he doesn't normally care about things like that, but it seemed like it was a point of attack, and he was not okay with that. So there's been a lot of that.
You know, and I don't know if you need to comment on this because you're a reporter, but I've listened to some of the testimony because you guys have been, you know, streaming some of this, and it just seems like, and this guy's name is David Axelrod, is not the same guy you see, you know, breaking down politics. He seemed like he was in a little bit over his head on this.
Yeah, and it's interesting too, because he's definitely done stuff before. From what I understand, he's the same part of the same team of attorneys that Amber Heard hired for her appeal. So he knows what he's doing. So I'm not really sure if it's just because it's here in Florida. He doesn't really feel like he's comfortable here. I really don't know what it is, but he's definitely a pretty accomplished attorney. So
is there a way to read the jury from your perspective or not?
Yes, kind of. I mean, really what I've been paying attention to is the questions that they've had for the witnesses, especially the two final witnesses that spoke today and yesterday. Some of the questions, the way that they were framed, were very pointed. And these were questions for people that that CNN put up. For instance, one of the reporters that spoke yesterday, a CNN reporter, her name is Katie Bo Lewis, she spoke yesterday, and one of the jurors asked her if CNN feels that every single person is obligated to speak to them. Like the way these questions were framed, it was very clear that some of them had already made up their minds.
Interesting.
Now, you know, it needs to be a unanimous jury. So we're about 2 hours in. Hopefully we'll find out tonight. If not, you know, tomorrow is going to be the day, and it's the last day. This is not going into the third week.
Jessica, great reporting. I've been following from afar. We'll keep people posted. I appreciate it. Thanks for coming on.
All right. All right,
Jessica Costescu is with the Free Beacon, and her and Nick are doing great work. I mean, this is what the attorney, man, you have no idea. I'm trying to not to be as excited as I really am, because I think this jury is going to put the freaking hammer down here. And it's about more than just this case and Zachary Young. And this is what Mr. Friedman, the attorney for Zachary Young, said. We ask you, addressing the jury, he says it's about sending a message. We ask you to send that message loud and clear. End this madness. Bring American journalism back to the center. Bring Walter Cronkite back. We used to turn on our news and we could rely on what was there. We can't anymore. You have the ability to fix it. You have the ability to send the message. Please do it. I don't think this jury can fix journalism, because I think it's broken forever, unfortunately. The good news is there's good journalism taking place at alternative publications and outlets right now.
Yeah.
But in this particular situation, I think that attorney is right. You know, people are frustrated. I think this jury is going to send a real strong message, and it's going to be fascinating how big the number is. And again, as a reminder, there was a settlement offer. CNN wanted to settle, and they said, nope, not with that number. We'll see if we get to $1 billion. Senator Schmidt is coming up in just a little bit. But first, Brian Kilmeade back with us. You heard him this morning on 97.1 FM Talk. He hosts One Nation every Saturday night, 8 p.m. Central. Brian, welcome back. How are you?
I want Brian Kilmeade.
Well, that's not him. There he is.
Oh, good, Mark. How are you?
Good. You're coming back to St. Louis in March, we hear, right?
Yeah, March 22nd. I will be there, so at the factory. So hopefully you'll be there.
Absolutely.
And I will work my way backwards from that. That's all that matters.
Well, I remember, you know, we were kind of keep this top secret for a little while, but you had texted me, I don't know, 4 or 5 weeks ago and said, hey, what's this factory place like out in Chesterfield? It's awesome. It really is. Steve Shankman is a good friend. They did it right. You're going to love this venue, and the listeners are going to love it. It's a great location out in Chesterfield. So do you have any of the details you'd like to share right now?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be 8 o'clock, and we're going to have a VIP about usually an hour, hour and a half before we get a chance to ask anything, sign books, and get pictures. And then we do the show, and I've been doing this for about 2-3 years, and we just keep developing it, getting it bigger. And we just thought there's a war on history, and now we have the comeback with Trump. And I just thought, if I use my books, instead of just waiting for a book tour, or waiting for an event, or someone to say, Brian, we need you to do history or news, and what if we create our own events? So I did it. It was going well. And I thought, what if I recreated some of those moments in time while having fun? So we set up sketches within each one of the books. And we also, I started out before I actually met you doing, I did 2 sports books. So we talk about, you know, the games do count. And it's how you play the game. And overall, we put together, I think it's a pretty, really good show. And Fox Nation says we want to stream it.
So oh, yeah?
They're streaming a lot of the shows, and because I change every show's different, so I try to change it. So, and then Mark, we're working through a few skits for sure, and we'll have you up in the beginning, and it's great. I mean, it's got a chance to really interact with the audience, and this looks like a just looking at the scheme now, it looks like a huge audience. It looks like a huge venue.
It's really big, and it's just beautiful. So I'm excited because I think you probably, arguably, especially for the size of the venue, you picked the best venue in St. Louis right now. You really did.
I mean, that's right here, and that's what I wanted to do. I said, hey, guys, we've got to get St. Louis going, and then one thing leads to another between book tours and elections and specials and Super Bowls. I said, what about this year? And they said, okay, we'll work on it. We finally got a date and a time. And the way it works is you bid on them. You know, you bid on the venues, and then they got to decide what position you're in and if you're in first or second. And then you go ahead, and then they book it, and this all worked out. So now we're finally set. You're just going to for a couple of days. It's going to be a pre-sale. You just go to BrianKilmeade.com. It'll be right there. Just click on St. Louis.
Well, that's awesome. We look forward to it. Yeah, it's a Saturday night too, which is great. It's the 22nd of March. Go to BrianKilmeade.com to find out more about tickets. It's going to be exciting. You know, there's this thing that they're building. You'll probably see it when you're here. It's out there in that same area, sort of on the other side of the highway. And this thing got caught up, I think, in some snags with construction. But somebody decided to put these two huge, maybe even three concrete buildings. So big bands, let's say the Rolling Stones, although they're not going to do much more touring, but a big band is going to go on tour, Brian. They need a rehearsal space. They built these big places out in this area where you're going to be, where bands can come in, fly into the private airport, which is right there, and set up basically an entire stage show like they would do, you know, in a tour in an arena or in a stadium and rehearse here in St. Louis. So it's kind of cool.
Oh, that should be fantastic. So I also know the area, and, you know, I also know the huge sports fans there, and also huge station fans there, so it's going to be great.
Have you cross-checked? I could do this probably while we're talking. Is our soccer team in town that weekend? Do you have any idea? We got to look at that, right?
You know what? I don't know. When did the season start? I thought it was April. Is it start as early as March?
It does. It starts in February. We'll keep chatting here, and I will look it up, and we'll see if we got a game around that time. Let's talk about Israel real quick. And, you know, one of the things I said yesterday, certainly Middle Eastern politics, not exactly my strong suit. But one thing I know, anchoring the news and doing a talk show over the years, is that ceasefire agreements don't often really hold. And this one looked like it was in jeopardy right off the bat today, didn't it?
That's what we reported all morning. That because it looked like Hamas was trying to swap out more worse killers than the killers they're already getting. So they're getting a bunch of people that are going to get out now. So that's distressing because you have other people living their lives, going to work, going to school, and they get kidnapped and they get tortured. And to get them out, you got to give up killers. And that's what you're doing. You're getting people that have life sentences and 103, most of the worst of the worst. It's not I disagree with you politically or we have a different religion. They were serious criminals. So that's the agonizing part. The good part is you get nine out, and then you're in phase one. Overall, over 42 days, 33 total hostages will get released. Nine living hostages out of the 33 will be exchanged first. Then they're going to wait 42 days somewhere in between there. If everything holds up, they're going to start with getting back. And then phase three would be all the bodies, remaining bodies of hostages returned in phase three, and a multi-year reconstruction plan for Gaza. But look, Gaza will get plenty of money. There'll be plenty of people that want to rebuild it. But the question is, are they going to build tunnels or are they going to build cities? So that's my problem with where we're at right now. And that's what Tom Cotton tweeted out. He said, this is the deal. You surrender, Israel wins. All hostages given up, or everybody in Hamas dies, and Israel and Iran, you're culpable because you're financing the whole thing, and that's really what Israel wants outside the hostage families, and that's why there's protests in the streets right now in Jerusalem, clogging up major thoroughfares because they feel as though they gave up too much. I always think Netanyahu is thinking two or three moves ahead of me, so I think that I think if you just look at this, I think that you're not seeing the whole picture. I think he knows that Trump has his back. And as soon as Israel breaks their agreement, Hamas, God, Palestinians, whatever you want to call them, whatever they want to call it themselves, as soon as they break their word, there's going to be gloves are off, as opposed to don't do it. That's what Biden was used to say.
Well, let's talk about Biden, because yesterday, you know, he was asked this question, did Trump have anything to do with this? He turns around and goes, are you joking? But I think there's even some consensus on the left that Trump had something to do with this, Brian.
Of course. No, who said that? His own State Department.
Right, exactly.
Working together with, with their envoy to the Middle East, working together, they have made this happen with Brett McGurk. And together, and the threat and the thought of Trump's coming in has helped expedite this. So I was able to meet these Qatari officials when they were here at the United Nations. And they've been writing me. And they say, what a difference the Trump election has meant to these negotiations. And they told me along the way, they actually even told me, too, that Hamas changed the rules at the very last minute. And that's what caused the holdup this morning. They tried to slide in some guys that weren't on the list. So that was, the issue.
So let me talk about politics in Monday and the inauguration and everything that's going on with that, because obviously, I've talked to a lot of people about this who are in the swamp, and everyone sort of agrees that there's a different tone coming in. Look, these confirmation hearings have gone pretty well. Pete did great a couple of days ago. Pam Bondi, awesome. I watched a little Marco Rubio. Even the Democrats were heaping praise, some of them, on Marco Rubio. So things seem to be going pretty smoothly into this transition, Brian.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's just no doubt about it. They're all going to get through. My question is, don't hold it up. If obviously Pam Bondi and all these people get through and Adam Schiff doesn't like Pam Bondi, that's a news alert. But it hurts the country when you don't have a Secretary of Defense, Secretary of State, CIA Director, DNI. It hurts the country when you can't have a Homeland Security Secretary. So understand, they're getting through. They got the votes. Have the vote. Because you're not helping anybody by delaying it, just like you're not helping anybody by allowing America to buy a wall and selling off it pennies on the dollar. You're also not helping anybody by, if the Supreme Court tells you you can't forgive student loans, just committing billions of dollars that are not yours towards paying off student loans that a lot of people right now welding are not too happy about.
Well, let me talk and ask you a little bit about California, because I was simply glued to a lot of this coverage late last week and into the weekend. I've handed it to these fire crews, because as bad as it was last Tuesday and Wednesday out there in the Palisades and Altadena, I watched so many of these crews do amazing things on Friday, Saturday, Sunday into yesterday when the winds finally died down. But Brian, how do you even start to recover out there?
I mean, I think I mentioned to you in 92, all my stuff burned, but I was just living by myself in an apartment. And, I lost all my belongings. I didn't lose, like, my family didn't have to worry about school. I didn't lose a house or a mortgage. I just had nowhere to live. So what you do is you immediately scramble and you try to get organized. And now that you could do stuff online, unlike in 1992, that you got to get a plan. And I think right now is you pass the point, well, woe is me, how do I do this? And you need to take action. Number one, I think it's, everyone gets $44,000 right off the top. I believe that's coming their way. At which time you have speed matters. You got to get a place to live. And I don't think a mobile home should be out of the question, especially if you can plug in somewhere and get some electricity while you figure out what's next, because I'm hearing terrible stories about gouging. So do you want to go spend, $45,000 for a place that costs $20,000? I mean, that's what I'm hearing.
Yeah, no, I know. There was one account, I think it was in the Wall Street Journal, where someone was, this was last week before things probably even got more intense this week, where someone was looking at a rental for $12,000, making an offer, and all of a sudden it went to $40,000 for the month. So the people that have money out there are going to try to make sure they get those properties. It's going to be a fierce competitive bidding process where I think a lot of people might lose out if they don't have the income.
Right. Absolutely. And, the credit check and full-time employment, a lot of people also have jobs. They'll say their business is burned down. So what do you do, too, if you're in the middle of a mortgage and got, $1,500 payment to make? What am I paying? Really? All I have is all my belongings are burned to the ground. Why am I paying? So it clearly, if you don't have any house on a property, it's less taxes. So I think people got to make some really tough decisions right now. And I think banks got to make tough decisions, too, because they're going to have a strong argument that I gave you a loan. It's not my fault. There were wildfires. So there are so many big decisions to make. And when you see the drone shots, you cannot overstate how devastating this is. And the fact is they have not gotten the fires out. It's unbelievable. The other thing is you just don't have any leadership out there at all. You have people pointing fingers, fire chief pointing at the mayor. The mayor's in Ghana. Obviously, the governor blames the mayor. The governor takes zero responsibility, but he deserves a lot of responsibility. So, here we go. So It's a lot of finger pointing, but there's no Rudy Giuliani's to rise up out of the ashes, Winston Churchill to inspire the masses. So there's an opportunity now in California for real leaders to step up without elected office. I thought it could be Kamala Harris's chance. No one blames her, but everybody knows her and she wants to be governor. She could step up and start walking the streets of Orange County and Hollywood and Malibu and Pacific Palisades and saying, what do you need?
That's not gonna
How
happen.
Can I help? Not a word.
I'll be very curious to see what Trump does here, because I think it's going to, you know, take a lot of cooperation, certainly with the feds as well. Hey, one of the big stories, we lost two giants today. David Lynch, director, a big fan of his. Bob Uecker as well. And I worked with Bob Uecker almost 10 years in Milwaukee, Brian. Did you ever encounter him or interview Uecker?
You know, I did a couple of times, and he's endlessly entertaining and interesting and always self-deprecating. But at 90 years old, he was such a staple. For he left the national scene after a while, but such a staple in sports. And I just thought that he was, I could remember his appearances on Carson.
Oh, yeah. Like 100 of them.
The guy mainstreamed it.
Yeah, I played some of the audio earlier. I'm going to do that. I have audio cut of the day coming up. But he was the funniest person that I've ever been around in person in my life, bar none, not even close. And in pulling some of the clips that I did today, you know, watching some of the Carson stuff, I've just been laughing my ass off here in the studio because he was certainly one of a kind. There's no doubt about that. Brian, one of the things that was great is, you know, many, many years when I was there, the Brewers were not very good at all. You get to August where there's nothing on the line, but he just shares stories. He knew that his role was not just to call balls and strikes. Right, he was trying to entertain people, and he did that endlessly. There's no doubt. Hey, what do you got coming up on Saturday night?
We got Senator Roger Wicker, chairman of the Armed Services, had a Pete Hegseth do. Got Jim Jordan. You know, Zuckerberg comes out and says, "Please read Jim Jordan's report. We gave him everything." That was his version of the Twitter files. We're gonna have James Woods from California. Believe it or not, we had James Woods, the actor, booked before the fires.
Oh, wow.
And he's been a conservative but doesn't want to do interviews, and the fires happened, and now he's out there. And he got an official title from Trump today, so that's going to be interesting. Got Mike Huckabee. He's going to be with us. And then Adam Carolla. So I think we're going to be jam-packed. I'll be going to doing it live, and we're doing it from D.C.
All right, Kilmeade, have a great weekend. BrianKilmeade.com to buy tickets for the event at The Factory, which is March 22nd. Here's what I'm thinking, Brian. I looked at this. Our team, City, plays on that very night at 6:30. You get there for a half, you go on stage, maybe 8:10, I'll get you here to the venue. How's that sound?
That sounds great.
They play
that early, right?
Yeah, 6:30. We'll do it. All right, Brian, take care.
All right, you got it, man.
Yeah, he's coming in on the 22nd. The team plays that night. He's a huge soccer fan, of course. I think he's going to probably focus on his show, and the tickets go on sale tomorrow.
So it's a new year, 2025, and you're thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How am I going to build something for myself? But where do I start? Shopify is how you're going to make it happen, and here's how. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. The best time to start your new business is right now. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates, no coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to start selling with Shopify today. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Hey, football fans, for those of you who can't get enough Baldy's breakdowns, be sure to subscribe to Brian Baldinger's The Best Football Show. New episodes drop Monday through Friday, where Baldy breaks down the best games of the week. Be sure to subscribe to The Best Football Show on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
Well, I have focused a little bit on the passing of Bob Uecker because I wasn't close with Bob, but I got to know him and I worked with him for about 10 years in Milwaukee, and I have some audio that's just amazing that I'll share here as audio cut of the day. Right now, let's go to Washington. Senator Eric Schmidt back with us on this Thursday afternoon. How are you?
I'm doing great, Mark. How are you doing?
I'm good. There's all these important things going on in the world. I want to talk to you about some of those important things, but there's one thing that's been on my mind for like 2 weeks now because I saw it on your Instagram, and I just have to know the answer. Did you beat Trump when you played golf with him?
You know what? I don't disclose private conversations with the president, nor do I disclose golf scores. But I'll tell you, I played well that day, and J.D. Vance was there, too. J.D. and I were actually supposed to play the day before, and then something happened, and we all played together, which was a lot of fun. But Trump is a good golfer. Like, legitimately, he does not miss fairways off the tee. His iron play is good, and he chips and putts. Like, he's like, he was chipping off the green for birdies. Like, he's a good golfer. Look, so we had a lot of fun.
You know what? I'm not even making this up. You post this video of him from behind, so you get to see his swing. It's a lot of golfer swings are very unique, right? We don't all look like pros, but I watched it several times and I kind of broke it down, and whatever he does, he's got great body rotation, and he gets the club down and he whacks it and he hits the ball straight.
Yeah. I mean, he's said he's playing better golf now than he did, you know, a decade ago. So, and you want to play well. Like, you know, like, I'm a competitive guy, so I wanted to play well that day, and I did. I played pretty well. It was fun.
I like to cheat. I don't know about you, but kind of fond of that. Hey, big week with confirmation hearings, and let's maybe start with Pam Bondi. You're on this committee with Hegseth and with Pam Bondi, but you got to know her just a little bit. Now we got another Florida AG, I guess, that's becoming the next senator that will join you in the chamber, right?
Yeah, Ashley Moody. Served with her when I was AG in Missouri, and she was in Florida. Ashley's great. And so I was glad to see that today from Florida, replacing Marco Rubio, who I've gotten to know. Marco is just, he's just a great guy. He's a very funny guy. You would like him. His knowledge of, like, pop culture, like, we would make jokes about, like, you know, Ricky Bobby lines from Talladega Nights.
Oh, that's awesome.
So, same generation talking about the same things.
I love it. Well, it's important for the audience to recognize, and this is one of my favorite stories about Senator Schmidt, that something happened like 13 years ago when that stupid song Party in the USA was on, and we just started, you know, basically punking each other. If we ever heard the song, we would send videos. Or one time 2 years ago, I think you're in the Senate, you call, I pick up the phone, it's Schmidt, and all I hear on the other end is Party in the USA because you're at a wedding or something like that.
Yes, I guess my humor from when I was 14 years old never left.
It's, oh, I appreciate that. I do.
But no, and Pam is awesome. Pam Bondi is great. She's like, I was thrilled with that pick and was honored to be asked to introduce her yesterday to the Judiciary Committee that I'm now on. And I can't say enough great things. I think she will go do a great job at DOJ and help restore trust and confidence in an agency, quite frankly, that's been weaponized and politicized. And is a great pick by President
Trump.
Yeah,
but so much evidence that he hates women, Eric. Come on, right?
Yeah, right. Just look at the picks. It doesn't seem to add up, right? So.
Pete, it was interesting to me because I watched a lot of Hegseth's hearing, and I thought he did very, very well. And you had, I don't know how well you've gotten to know Tim Kaine. I think Tim Kaine's got a problem with me because he went to Mizzou and then he went to KU, and that's a fatal character flaw. But he beat the crap out of Hegseth, I thought, in a very unfair way. Then the next day he turned around, I'm watching him with Marco Rubio, and he's like heaping praise on Rubio, and seems like he's even going to vote for that confirmation. So some of this is confusing to me. I know it's a show
I think it was a lot of show with Hegseth. I think the Democrats, you could tell they had a strategy, a line of questioning. They were just trying to bloody him up. He's going to get confirmed, and he's a reformer. He's a guy who was on the front lines. He's got dust on his boots, as he said, and he wants to restore a warrior culture and get rid of this woke culture. And I agree with him. And a lot of my questioning, of course, was about DEI and getting that out and how ridiculous it is. I highlighted the fact that the Air Force Academy, until very recently, had disfavored terms. You couldn't say mom and dad. You couldn't say we're all just people. I mean, this is nuts. Like, this stuff is nuts. It has no place in our military. I think he'll root it out. He's very focused on China, and he's very focused on procurement reform. We've got to be more nimble with our weapon systems and how we buy things, and I think he's up for the challenge.
Yeah, we played some of the audio yesterday when you were asking some of those questions or offering some of those examples. So the inauguration, obviously, is Monday. It's going to be a big day in Washington, but obviously, Eric, the work has already started.
Yeah, no, they're, I'm looking forward to it. I've never been to a presidential inauguration, so, you know, to be a senator from Missouri, to go to it is truly an honor, and I think there's so much optimism, Mark, for what lies ahead, and so the confirmation process, we want to give President Trump his team as quickly as possible. I think we're doing that, and then, you know, these tax cuts that were enacted in 2017 are set to expire. We've got a lot of work to do, and I think ultimately with President Trump, and we talked about it on the golf course, delivering on what he talked about on the campaign, he was really clear: secure the border, be energy dominant, you know, restore our standing in the world, have an economy that works for working families. We can deliver those things. And it's not political. Like, it's, you know, I think that helps cement the status of the party of working class families. But it's just, it's good for America.
That's right.
There's just more, there's just optimism, I think. Why not, you know, just realize the full potential of this country and every individual? And I think he's focused on it. We've got the trifecta to go do it. We should do it.
Well, along those lines, you know, you talk about Marco Rubio. He's a Republican. But have you developed, because it's interesting to kind of see him emerge in a different way. We all maybe prejudge him a little bit. Have you developed a relationship with John Fetterman at all?
Yeah. John and I go to dinner. I did early on, though. He was listed as 6'8". And I'm 6'6", and I questioned his height.
Yes.
So we did a back-to-back in front of the Capitol. Turns out I am taller than John Fetterman. Let's get that out of the way.
There's the freshman
Republicans that included J.D. Vance and Katie Britt. We'd go to dinner once a month, and we thought it was important to carve that time out and get to know each other as people. We all have kids around the same age. We're in our 40s, that kind of thing.
Nice.
And then we extended that out to the Democrats as well, and Fetterman is a regular attendee, and you just, you know, you get to know people. John is still going to vote the wrong way most of the time, but it is nice to see some level of independence that he's exhibited on this, you know, the Laken Riley Act that we're voting on in the next day or two, and also on, you know, support for Israel. So,
yeah, and that was my next question on the Laken Riley Act. Is that going to get done this week, do you think?
I think so, yeah. We're going through some amendments. Maybe tonight, also tomorrow, and then, but I think that'll get done. But I think you're going to see a flurry of executive actions on day one from President Trump related to the border. This deportation thing is real. There's a lot of criminals in this country. I mean, there are millions of them, and we need to take care of that. I mean, the American people spoke pretty loudly and clearly on that. We need to secure the border. The Democrats, I still don't think they get this. I still think they're captured by these leftists who write white papers about open borders. And I don't think they really understand the message that the American people delivered on November 5th. But we're gonna go do that and make sure that we have a secure border. And lastly on that, the policy of the United States, which, by the way, wasn't a Republican or Democrat thing, forever was if you were here illegally, you were detained. And then if you claimed asylum and 9 out of 10 of those were bogus, okay, you would get to stay. But if not, you were deported. So the idea of deporting people is not anything new. Bill Clinton deported 12 million people, okay? Like, it's not a new concept. Only in the last 4 years has this been a four-letter word. So we got to restore law and order again. I think we're getting ready to do that.
And a lot of this, you know, even with the House passing the issue with I don't even know how you're referring to it now, but it's basically enforcing Title IX and protecting women's sports, and that's going to come over to the Senate as well.
Yeah, this is just nuts. All this stuff is nuts. And I think the most effective ad, at least, you know, from everything that I've read, the most effective ad that President Trump had at the end of the campaign was the craziness of allowing men to play in women's sports. And, you know, she's with they, them, and he's for us. That resonates with a lot of people.
It does. A lot of Democrats.
A lot of Democrats. And so anyway, I think that's why President Trump won the popular vote in addition to sweeping the battleground state.
There was a guy, I don't even know who this guy is, Jason Myers, who posted something. I retweeted this today. It was a front cover of a newspaper in Virginia. It was the Richmond Times-Dispatch, and the headline said, GOP calls for ban on trans women in women's sports. And Jason said, fixed it, and he just basically made it say, GOP calls for ban on men in women's sports, which was more accurate headline. So I appreciated that. Hey, I also want to take some personal pressure off your plate. I know you're probably feeling it from a friend like me, but I invoked your name yesterday because I was thinking about this during the confirmation hearings. If you become president someday, and I'm hoping that you will, you're probably going to feel obligated to appoint me to some big position, is my guess. But Eric, I could never be confirmed if for no other reason I couldn't sit through one of those things without having to pee. I don't know how they do it. I really don't.
All right, noted. Noted. We'll take you off the list, Mark.
I knew it was at the top anyway. Schmidt, awesome to hear you. Happy New Year. Have fun next week, okay?
All right, my friend.
All right, take care. I've got some cookies to go in the oven when I get home tonight. I've been chilling my dough this afternoon. So we had a staff meeting today. I love meetings. I cannot tell you how much I love meetings.
I think we all do.
Wow, it's my favorite thing. But I did something very unique this morning. I actually signed on to one of our company meetings.
I did the same.
Yeah, we did there was a Zoom call. But as I was doing the meeting, I was using my mixer. You know, my KitchenAid, and I was making some chocolate chip cookies. I'm going to take some out to Las Vegas for my friends out there and leave some for my wife because she's a big fan of my chocolate chip cookies. So,
oh, that's nice.
Yeah, so these I screwed some up over the weekend. I've been trying different recipes. As you know, all the recipes are basically the same.
Yes, they are.
This one is weird. I don't even know if it has any influence, but let me just tell you the one thing that's different about this recipe, okay? You got the brown sugar, the sugar, the flour, blah, blah, blah. But then, and I think it's baking powder, not baking soda. I used the right one. But it has you take hot water, like a teaspoon of hot water or something like that, and mix it with the baking powder.
Why?
And then put it in.
To activate it like yeast?
I don't know.
That's interesting.
All I know is I did it the last time I used this recipe,
and
it worked out fantastic.
Okay.
So I did it again, and we will let you know how that goes. And I'll bring some in maybe next week. Yeah, I'm off tomorrow, and on Monday we'll have most of the crew here tomorrow, though. Jane's going to be here. Mike Elam's going to fill in, and he'll have Jane on the round table. I always like it. Nothing against Ryan Recker. Ryan's a friend. He does great work, but when he's doing it from afar, and he doesn't do the round table. So Mike's going to take that. Donna Behringer, Gene Evans all on the panel. Paul Hall at Entertainment. Cusimano will be here on Monday. This was one of those trips that I kind of had planned and made a decision before I recognized, oh, yeah, that's Inauguration Day. But it's also MLK Day. And we
technically have
the day off.
So you can roll it in.
I'm taking that day off. I don't think Mark is and Annie, but Mike will be here. Mike Elam filling in for me on Monday, and then I'll be back on Tuesday. I have a bit of an extended cut of the day today.
Stand by. Playback ready.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
Well, I want to focus on Bob Uecker, and he was just a legend. He was so damn funny. I got to know him when I was in Milwaukee, and first and foremost, he was a great play-by-play guy.
Yelich sends one to right center and deep. Get up! Get up! Get out of here and gone for Yelich!
And Christian became very close with Bob, and I just retweeted one of his tweets where he honored his dear friend who died at the age of 90. But, you know, this was a guy that was known for baseball. He was on the Cardinals, of course. He played with Mike Shannon. He was a catcher. He went on Johnny Carson's show literally 100 times.
Were you injured like a lot of ballplayers? They always seem to retire because of injuries. The elbow goes or the legs go. Were you plagued by any injuries when you played at all?
I think for me it was more my hands than anything else.
Well, you were a catcher.
Yeah. You know, you go in a bar after a ball game and you're sitting there 3-4 hours popping a few, and sooner or later somebody's going to step on your hands, you know?
It was always very, very deadpan, and this is one of our favorites. I've played this before over the years, but this is legendary. He told this story on Johnny Carson as well.
Obviously, you know, we get a shot of it as a...
This is
obviously a team...
This is a team picture that once a year they have these team picture days is what they are, and on this particular day, this cost Bob Gibson, one of the great pitchers in baseball, it cost him and I a couple $100. They had taken the picture and they had proofed it and everything and then brought it back to the ballpark before they finally caught that scene there.
What, can you come a little closer on that?
Well, Bob and I are holding hands.
We're gonna get a shot of that. You certainly are, aren't you?
Yeah, so the visual of that was that they zoomed in on the picture and they circled it, and sure enough, he's sitting there with Bob Gibson. They basically have their hands on each other's laps.
Yes, somebody posted that on social media today. If you Google it, I bet you can find it. It's fun.
And then I'm going to let Norm MacDonald, another comic legend, share this story because we liked it so much, about his friend when Norm was alive, Bob Uecker.
Voice of the Milwaukee Brewers.
Well, Bob Uecker is one of my best friends. He's a great man. I know Artie told a story when he was here, and Bob was not too thrilled with that. But
it's Artie Lang you're talking
Artie
about.
Artie Lang, yeah. But Bob is a very, very funny man, and I go often go in the booth with him, you know.
Oh, sure.
So one time we were there, and John Fogerty was in the audience. Mm-hmm. You know, a fortunate son, you know. So John Fogerty was there, so... Bob Uecker is a very interesting guy. He thinks of everybody as the same. He doesn't think of people as stars or anything like that. He's a very down-to-earth guy. So he was talking to me. He says, "Hey, man, you know that guy?" I go, "Yeah." He goes, "That's John Fogerty, rock and roll singer." So I go, "Yeah, yeah, I know who it is." He goes, "Yeah, man." He goes, "But I played in a golf tournament with him." He goes, "You probably think of him as some that likes to bite the heads off of chickens, but this guy can...
He was slaying Letterman.
That's exactly how I think of him.
this guy can get it out of the sand trap like nobody's business. So he goes, he's got a hell of a set of pipes on him. He goes, come the seventh inning stretch, I'll have him up here. He'll sing for you. So I said, no, Bob, don't do that. Like, don't have him come up and sing for me, please, you know. He goes, what's the matter, man? Don't you even know who he is? He got all mad. So I go, yes, Bob, I know who he is. He did Creedence Clearwater Revival.
Yeah.
He goes, yeah, he did all that.
I love Norm Macdonald. I love that story. And that's how Bob was. I was telling you, one of the things that we did, I wish I had some recordings of some of this. I told you, when he went to Montreal, he would do a half inning when he would call the game as a French-Canadian. He had this accent. He just had a blast with that. And then we did this thing where we had a fantasy baseball game when I was at WTMJ doing the morning show. And Bob would just go in during spring training and record all these. And he was given a bunch of different plays and names. So in other words, Sue, let's say you were the character that Bob was going to call the play. So a listener would call, and we'd say, hey, is Sue Thomas going to get a single, a double, an out, or whatever? And the listener would have to guess, and then there'd be tickets on the line or
something
like that.
And then you just play whatever
so
he said.
Then we'd play, and we would never know what was coming, because he did this in the studio, and he did it, you know, rapid fire. But then, like, if I was the player, yeah, Mark Reardon up to bat. I think Reardon's up to bat. Here he goes. Oh, he fell down at the plate. Something goofy like that. And every one of them was unique
That's awesome. Different.
And he just was a great storyteller. I was at a dinner with him. Maybe the first time I was at dinner was at this Milwaukee Brewers dinner, which is interesting as well, because I don't know who the speaker was supposed to be. It was supposed to be someone else, and they got sick. And you know who the guest speaker was? A guy named Andy Reid that nobody
Are
knew
you
anything about.
Oh,
he was coaching for the Packers at the time. And that guy went on to be a legend as well. Anyway, Sue, I'm off for a few days. Enjoy the roundtable tomorrow and have fun with Jane and Frank and Paul Hall. I'll be back after the inauguration. I could lie and say I'm going to the inauguration, but no, I'm going to Vegas and having some fun out there. We'll see you Tuesday.
Get more at 971talk.com.